Okay, guys, welcome to Into the Apocalypse episode. Who knows? It is Thursday, May 19th. 2022. Shut X, how's it going?
Pretty good, man. Pretty good.
Yeah. I just got done listening to your The World As It Is Today with you and Lanny about the baby formula shortage, and it was very good.
Yeah, thanks, man. I think that was one of our best ones we've done.
They're all good. I listen to them all. They're all really good.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, we talk about that subject fairly regularly. Then all of a sudden, it started popping up in Twitter and all this shit. And it's a doozy of a subject. I even listened to Dave Smith's most recent one.
He was I listened to that today too.
Even though he was wrong about some things, he did do what he does, which is laid down the correct libertarian point of view on it. It was good, you know. And he made me think about a couple things too.
What perspectives did you have an issue with, or not an issue, but what did you think was off on his assessment?
Well, I think that he put a little too much belief in the need for formula.
Right. Yeah.
It just in general, I felt like he didn't hit the health aspect of it really at all. He was coming at it more from a free market point of view of just that that people should be able to compete. This shouldn't be a shortage because we should be able to have companies competing to get it out there. But the one thing that he said that really I had overlooked, you know, something that hasn't crossed my mind with all that, believe it or not, and it's probably the first thing that crosses a lot of people's minds, is babies dying of starvation. And, you know, because my point of view is just, well, you're going to breastfeed, or you can, there are other options like raw milk feeds. Weston A. Price has some great guidelines for how to feed babies and, you know, this and that. But the thing that I really overlooked, and Lanny kind of disagrees on this, but I need to really think about it and come to understand, is once a mother has stopped giving breast milk, it's not very easy to get that back, from my understanding of things.
If they've done it previously, like for a short time, then switched to formula,
or just never did.
Yeah.
If in the hospital, they said, oh, they won't latch, here, we'll get you formula, and then they just never breastfeed.
Yeah.
And say that baby is 3 months old, they can't sustain, they might be able to, I don't think they can eat food. Their mouth and throat aren't developed in such a way that they can eat. So they have to drink something in the form of formula. And if that mother cannot get it, she might be dealing with a starving baby. And that's really, really tragic. And I hadn't put my mind in that spot to feel empathy for that. And
It's like a really tough situation, because it's not like starving children in Somalia because there's no food. Like, you could actually have food and your baby could starve.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not like even a kid older, like say there was a shortage of Hot Pockets and then, oh, our kids are going to starve because all
college students all over the country would be starving.
Yeah. College students are dropping like flies of starvation because of the Hot Pockets shortage. You know, no, in those cases, there's something else right there.
Yeah.
And there is something else.
Bagel dogs.
Bagel dogs, pizza bites, you know, shit like that.
Totinos.
But in the case of this, there's not necessarily an alternative. Especially, again, you got to think that because Weston A. Price and all the what I think of is good baby formula that you can make yourself requires raw milk. And I don't think that's as available to everyone as it feels to me.
Yeah. I mean, it's not available to me. I got to drive an hour to get it.
Mm-hmm. And if you had a starving baby, you would drive an hour.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's available on that level, but I think that, I mean, I could be wrong about this. I'm not really milk.
I'm a weirdo too. And I know that I can drive an hour and get it. I guarantee you that most people around me don't know that they can drive an hour to go get raw milk.
Yes, exactly. So it's,
they don't know that they can go get $12 a gallon raw milk at Chuck's in Vancouver, Washington, you know, like.
And as passionate as I am about the subject, I'm not allowed to talk about it because I'm a man. but B, you know, it's a little more delicate and complex than I had thought as we recorded that episode. So we might do a follow-up or something and kind of get some more ideas out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Dave Smith is right on most stuff. Wrong on when he's wrong, though, he's really wrong. I listened to his like 4-hour. He does a State of the Union with
Ari Shaffir. Oh,
yeah, he does that every year. And I listened to it yesterday or the day before. And
how was that this year?
I mean, it's good. It's entertaining, but he still gets stuff wrong. Like, I hate it when everybody's like, when people say like, when it was first starting, how deadly we all thought this was. And it's like, no, mm-hmm. We didn't all think. I went back and looked at my Instagram from like February of 2020. And I was like, I remember I had a picture on Instagram of the really long gun line at Sportsman's Warehouse.
Yeah.
And I just had to took a picture of it and I wrote, I'm not really scared of the sniffles, but I am scared of people's reactions.
Yeah.
And I was like pre-mask, pre-toilet paper, everything, I think. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. You mentioned him being wrong with COVID. It was a few months ago. It was still really dark out. So it was like midwinter. And I went to listen to a new one from him. I don't remember why I was, what it was that I wanted to hear, but either I downloaded it wrong or I just used my device wrong. And I put on an older episode that was from like, I don't know, maybe like June of 2020.
Yeah.
And he was talking about COVID and I was going, holy shit, he has everything wrong. He's wrong. And then he said something that was just like, wait a second. He doesn't know, like, cause he was saying that if there's a vaccine or something like that. And I'm like, wait, I'm in the wrong era. But like, yeah, listening back to him, you know, it was like, man, he really was not right about a lot of stuff at that time.
Yeah.
But again, just like the formula, it's all on health. What he is right about is the libertarian, you know, the capitalist point of view on things.
Yeah. He said, I think at one point he was like, there's not thousands of Canadian babies dying from the baby formula they use in Canada and right. their shelves are stocked. Why can't we use Canadian baby formula here?
And you know, that's cool. Okay. You know, I see that, but really I do believe that no one should be using that baby formula. Nobody should be feeding their baby high fructose corn syrup, you know, and a lot of the other ingredients that are in these things.
The point of being addicted to sugar before you even have a choice of eating sugar or not, that made a ton of sense to me. And I don't know what my situation was. I don't know if I was given formula or if I probably was. I think most kids my age were.
Most kids post 70s are.
And I am severely addicted to sugar. Like, yeah. Bad. Like, I got sober. And then 8 years later, I got diagnosed with a fatty liver, not from alcohol, from refined sugar.
From Skittles and shit.
From Sour Patch Kids and Red Vines, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Did, let me ask you this. Did you eat more sugar after getting sober?
Yeah.
Yeah. You
maybe I mean, immediately after, like, I love drinking Coke. Mm-hmm. And I love snorting Coke and I love drinking Coke as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But I would never like have a 12 pack in the fridge, you know. But after I got sober, I was like, I was buying 12 packs of Coke and yeah.
Yeah.
And it just continued. And I was always eating a lot of sugar, you know, mm-hmm. a lot. So and I'm like when I start eating, I like would finish whatever I was I would get like one of the medium sized bag of Sour Patch Kids like a day and like pound it.
Yeah.
Or I would go to like, I'd be like Trader Joe's, which was like a 10 minute drive from my old house. And I would like get like licorice and stuff there or like cinnamon bears and be done with them. Like by the time I got home.
Yeah. 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 Sugar addiction is it's an overlooked addiction.
Yeah. For sure. But I'm off like most refined sugar. I don't like check the ingredients that much. So if I'll eat like some ketchup, you know, if it has.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But like as far as like candy, soda, I've been off for a really long time. I eat honey. I eat local raw honey. That I kind of maybe overdo it a little bit on that, but you know, that's about it.
Hey, good on you, man. That's hard shit to do. Just like, you know, getting sober.
Oh yeah. Like I got, go ahead. Sorry.
Changing your diet, especially with the sugar. Sugar is, it's fucking amazing how different you feel after like fasting. I'm going to use the word fasting from sugar, even though I don't mean to fast totally.
Yeah.
But just not consuming it regularly. It changes your palate. It changes it changes the way you, I don't know that it actually changes the way your body responds to it, but you become aware of how your body responds to it as opposed to just living in it. Like, just like with booze or whatever, you know, like if you quit drinking booze and then you do again, you're like, oh fuck, how did I do this and work, yeah. You know, or whatever.
Yeah. And I was a bad drunk. And when I quit drinking, I was like, I was ready. I was on my terms, you know? And, I haven't like, I got over like cravings for alcohol almost immediately. I know that's not everybody's experience because not everybody gets sober on their own terms. I think that's a lot to do with it. They get sober because other people tell them to, but when I was done, I was done and I quit cold turkey and like, didn't want to drink anymore for real. Like I worked at a bar like the whole time through like early sobriety, which is really like looked down upon in 12-step programs, you know, like sure. People would like scoff at me and stuff and be like, oh, you're not gonna make it. And I was fine. I could walk through the liquor aisle, but I want candy every day. Mm-hmm. And I never think about alcohol. So yeah, it's the real deal. But what else is going on? How's everything out at the homestead, getting stuff done? Or we're not supposed to call them homesteads anymore. Sorry, Dean.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny. It's like, I'm with you there. I mean, you listen to Dean, right?
Yeah.
Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah.
I really appreciated that episode, but it reminds me as now I'm kind of trying not to use the word homestead. And it reminds me a bit of like, discovering flat earth. And then you're like, yeah, but the global elites, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh, wait, the global, you know, or it's like all the way around the world. Oh, wait, you know, it's like all these things in our vocabulary. Yeah,
I like the term that you came up with of decentralized living, right? Is that
Yeah,
but there's no way to like work that into like what I'm going to call where I live, you know?
Right. Oh, you want to come check out my decentralized living space?
Yeah. So... But yeah, everything's good out here. I think the weather's about to change and get all good. Oh, we got a big package from Mitch in the mail. So
sweet.
So Emily and I think are gonna try to scab together some sorry form of a garden this weekend. And I was like, oh, well, if we're doing it together, like as a couple's deal, we should go out and gift all this Oregon on our property and see if we can make something happen. Yeah. I swear I saw a change the day, like your guys' experience. Like it was the bluest sky I'd seen since I got here when the package was sitting on the deck, my back porch.
Yeah.
Like waiting to come inside.
Dude, it's freaking amazing. Like I haven't even buried any of that yet. Right. I've just got the hockey pucks placed around.
Yeah.
And me and Lanny are going to work together to decide like where we're going to put them. He's got some instructions and stuff that I want.
He just gave you a bunch of earth pipes and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I got too.
And a few hockey pucks.
Yeah.
But just having those in my house, I don't know, maybe this is all psychosomatic or, you know, whatever, but holy shit, I am seeing so many less chemtrails over my house. I'm still seeing them in the city. I'm still seeing them from here. But I swear the week before and the weeks and months and a year before that package arrived, like every day I could see the sky, there were ones going directly over my house. And I have not seen one over my house since.
Remember how he was talking about how it could make them dissipate kind of like a double helix?
Yeah.
I think I saw that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I don't know.
I think there's something to this.
Yeah, I do too. And I tell Emily about it and she thinks I'm crazy. And okay. I didn't know what
In this realm, man, it's we have to embrace when people think we're crazy.
Yeah. And it's fun. What's the big deal? We're gonna go out and we're gonna hammer copper pipes into the ground and see what happens, you know?
Yeah.
But our guest is here, guys. We had a bunch of donations the past week or two. I'm not going to read through them now because we're running a little late on this intro, but I will get to you guys on the next one. So thanks to everybody who's been donating. We really appreciate it. But we're going to pause. We're going to let our guest in, or maybe let's just let him in.
All right. Let's just do it. Surprise him.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Emmanuel Kingman, are you there? You are live.
I am here.
On the gentlemen? Apocalypse. We didn't even pause for you. You're on the air. Awesome. How's it going?
I'm doing well. I feel like a first-time caller.
Yeah. First time, long time.
Yeah. How are you guys doing? It's been a while.
Oh, yeah. It's doing. It's going good here, man. How's it going with you?
It's super busy. I just got in. I went straight from work to down to the softball field to do to handle a little business for a few minutes, and that's why I'm a few minutes late here. So apologies on my tardiness for you guys, but no, super busy lately. How's Puerto Rico? I saw that you were just down there, right?
Yeah.
How was that?
It was beautiful. It was really warm and awesome, and it like poured rain and was cold in Oregon the whole time we were gone. So
We're
happy to get out. But yeah, like I said on previous episodes, Puerto Rico is a masked up dystopia. It is insane.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a lovely, lovely place. And the beaches were really nice, and swimming in the Caribbean was really cool. Like, even if you go to someplace on the West Coast where it's hot out, if you go swimming in the Pacific, no matter where you are, it's fucking cold.
Oh yeah.
So, yeah, real cold.
Wow. Did they make you wear a mask too, or is just
optional? There's no mandates.
Oh, okay.
There's no mandates. But wow.
Propaganda must be huge down there then.
Yeah. And like I said, like even we flew from Puerto Rico into JFK in New York for a layover, and they still have like over the PA system, they still have like the public service announcement saying that you need to be wearing a mask over your mouth and nose. You'll be given a $50 fine if you don't, and it's still playing.
And that was at JFK?
Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy, man.
Yeah, and then like everywhere you go, if you look online at like the Puerto Rico stuff, like my wife was just checking just to make sure that we didn't need passports like right before we left. And it's all the stuff up is still up about like how you need either a current vaccination card or you have to quarantine. And it's not true. You don't have to, but they don't bother taking it down.
Yeah.
Well,
you quick to put it up, slow to take it down.
Yeah.
You forget about the craziness in the world when you live around sane people.
Yeah, I know. Or if you when you live out in the woods, don't talk to anybody. But yeah, like I said, Puerto Rico made Portland, Oregon look like Tampa Bay, Florida.
Oh, well,
it's crazy.
That's wild.
Yeah. But we're really happy to have you back. We got great reviews and people really loved the last time you were on, and then it was fun going on and talking with you and Mimi too. So you requested to come back on. Mm-hmm. You've got some stuff you want to tell us about. You want to just get into it?
Yeah, so I want to talk about Christ Millennial Kingdom, and I loved being on last time. And actually, so when I had you guys on, we were talking right in the beginning about how this was one of my favorite appearances. I kind of goofed up and said when I listened back, I sounded good. That's not what I meant. It was that I was glad that I sounded good, but in the moment talking to you guys, I can feel the energy. You know, like being psychic and all, being energetically. Secure with what I'm feeling when I'm talking to people and they're responsive and acceptive of what I'm saying. I'm like, okay, now I can open up a little bit. And it was such a great talk. And, you know, I wanted to say that to you guys because I listened back to that and I was like, oh, that is not what I meant, because it sounded like I was being egotistical. But yeah, I loved having you guys on. We learned a lot, and Mimi and I, we got our food for us. I think we got our food for us after we talked to you guys. So
yeah. How's it working out?
It's amazing. Well, it's a lot of work for Mimi. So,
yeah,
she's definitely putting in a lot of labor and that wasn't there previously. It was a lot more labor intensive than we had realized adding in what, like 30 some plants immediately, like not full grown, but you know, decent sized plants that quickly that it would be so much work. So yeah. Anyway, yeah. So just a little difference with that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So,
well, man.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, well, the feelings mutual about last time you were, and when we were over there, you know, the energies were freaking awesome.
Yeah.
And, you know, I knew that's what you meant when you said that as well. Like, you know, maybe I'm being a little intuitive there too, when I was listening, but, you know, me and Adam were just, I think this will be a good lead into what we're going to talk about of that. We were just talking about the word homestead, and we're kind of trying to move away from using that word for different reasons, kind of going for more like decentralized living or something to that effect. Right. But yet we both are constantly using the word homestead. Similarly, you know, about a year, 2 years, I guess about 2 years ago, I first heard of this concept of Tartaria, and it blew my mind. And well, it didn't necessarily blow it right away. It took a little while. I had to view the world through a different kind of lens and started coming around. And, you know, I a lot of things opened up for me after introducing this word Tartaria. And me and Adam did a Tartaria panel quite a while ago. I was pretty new into podcasting at the time, and it was a round table with Andy Rouse and Dananaki Dan. Michelle Gibson was there.
Oh, I heard that one.
Yeah, it was great. But I had some hangups that I didn't even realize I had at the time, that were, you know, I listened back to that, and because I missed a little bit of it, I came in late, and I listened back, and you know, everybody said the parts that I'd missed, they were talking about how they didn't quite understand the timeline and some other things. And then towards the end, Dananaki asked us who we thought the builders were, or maybe it was what year we thought that the reset would have happened. And when it was my turn to talk, I was like, well, I don't know, I guess, like, you know, 1850, 1860, something like that, because I felt that I needed to answer that at that time and be a part of the cool kids. It was my first time being at the cool kids table, you know, and I didn't want to be too far off, but really I was thinking, man, I don't know. I have no idea, because I don't know if I understand this civilization well enough to know who the builders were, what time this reset would have taken place and all of this. And then Dan answered, he said, he was like, oh, I think it happened way longer ago. And in my head, I went, whoa, wait, we can play with this more than just this concept of Tartaria, which seemed to be the central focus point of all these things. And the time since then, just like the word homesteading, I'm kind of drifting away from the word Tartaria.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not opposed to it. And it's still maybe like, just like homesteading is a good placeholder word. Most people know what I'm talking about when I use it, but there's something deeper to that concept. Same with Tartaria. People might know what I'm talking about to some degree, but I'm not necessarily at all thinking of specifically Tartary as a nation anymore. And I've attached it more. I much prefer the term like old world for this concept. And it feels way freer, way more open to talk about the old world versus new world. Just as for 10 years before hearing of Tartaria, I was, and I'm still to a degree convinced that there was an ancient civilization that we've lost, that we've forgotten about, that's not in the records to be found anywhere. And if I look at it now, especially after listening to your 8-part series on the millennial kingdom, I'm like, that fits into my lens really well for looking at this, just as well as Tartaria. but it realistically has nothing to do with Tartaria.
Exactly. Yeah. So like what you're saying with the word Tartaria, I mean, we can start there for a minute. Like for anyone who's unfamiliar with Christ's Millennial Kingdom, like to me, when I heard that concept, I'm like, that makes more sense just on the face of it, that if there was this old world civilization that we all, you know, we get caught up in the lost history of flat earth. I mean, it's a great piece that that guy put together, and you see all of the possibilities, and you use your imagination, and you're not thinking in a stuck way of, you know, this is how things have to be the way that we live. Then you start imagining things, and then, you know, you do enough research, you talk to enough people, you're like, okay, I definitely see that there was some kind of old world civilization, but why would it be covered up? And that's where people get hung up on. They don't really pursue that part. But as soon as I heard that, oh yeah, they're covering up Christ's Millennial Kingdom, I was like, wait, what's that mean? And they're like, oh, well, Jesus was going to have 1,000 years of peace on earth. Satan would be bound in the pit, and that it would be 1,000 years of humanity wouldn't be influenced by Satan and his minions. And I was like, oh, that has to be something to it. Like if they're covering up anything, because as with all conspiracies, when you start to look at the way Jesus is attacked himself, you know, forget about Christianity. Christianity is attacked in its own way, and some of it's deservedly so, but Jesus himself is mocked, whereas Krishna, Buddha, they aren't mocked. You don't have Mithras being mocked. You don't have Lucifer being mocked. You have actually people are satanic, openly Luciferian, and you have different versions of all these different things. So then it's actually biblical, is these things that are in our face with these rulers of the realm, as I like to deem them. They are very in our face about the negative side of Christ and Jesus specifically. There's something that they wear upside down crosses. I mean, what was her name? Jen Psaki, I think, was just wearing an upside down cross not too long. It was someone. Maybe I'm wrong on Jen Psaki, but it was someone was wearing an upside down cross.
Bill Gates's wife was wearing some pretty satanic imagery not that long ago. Melinda Gates.
Yeah. They do that stuff all the time.
That's Kevin Kline, the actor.
Yes, it is. Yeah. But yeah, they do that stuff all the time, and it's always against Jesus, and they badmouth him, but it's hard pressed to find anybody who, I mean, you can't find anyone who ever said anything bad about him when he was alive, or that, you know, I had this interaction with this deity called Jesus or Yeshua or Yahweh, however you want to, the name that you want to place on him, and said that they had a negative attachment, that I had to get this demon cleared. Like, that's never, anybody has never said that, right? So he's always attacked for whatever reason. So when I heard about Christ's Millennial Kingdom, I was like, okay, I got to do more research into this. And then, so, you know, I got pretty familiar with it. Then, what's his name? Esoteric Gladiator. He was on New York Patriots show. And this was after I had a good understanding about things already. And he started breaking down the word, the Greek word for Jesus as a carpenter. And it doesn't mean carpenter. And that's, I really got into studying that. Then I'm like, okay, well, what's this word actually mean? And it means that he's a builder, essentially a master builder. And of course, if we have all these buildings that are immaculate, that we couldn't imagine how they were built, well, who else would do it but the builder of everything? And that's not all that word means. It also is a metaphor for the skilled, for a skilled handler of the word of God. So then it's like, boom, there's, okay, this word has multiple meanings. They all fit Jesus, as he's not just a carpenter who builds, works with wood and builds that way, but he builds everything, and he shows us how to build it. And then it just started really falling in place for me. And then when you look at the word Tartaria, we have to go back to the New Testament's written in Greek, and the word Tartarus in Greek is the abyss or hell or Sheol. It's a specific part of it, actually, that is designed and designated for the fallen angels, that it's carved out in the center, Tartarus. So when you look at the word Tartaria, well, it's important to understand that the Greek definition of the suffix IA actually means, there's multiple, but one of the definitions is belonging to, a condition of, or a state of. So it's a condition of Tartar. It's a state of Tartar. It's belonging to Tartar, Tartar being the root word for Tartarus. So, I mean, it's all there in the language itself. So when you start to break down the language, then you can see that, oh, Tartaria is a psyop. You see, the CIA released a document about this. Oh, okay, that's psyop. The communists were covering this up, but they didn't cover up really all that much. Just they took it out of school. You know, they left it on the maps. They left it on the globe. So like, I got this globe back here. It says Tartaria real huge on it. You know, I would pull it up, but I don't know that you guys would be able to see it if I moved
it. What kind of globe is that?
Like, I think it's a Freemason globe.
Really?
Dude.
Yeah. I mean, this has all sorts of stuff on it. So I can open it up, and it has... hold on a sec.
Is that like an antique?
Whoa.
Is
it...
No, yeah, this has all the different zodiacs in here. No, it's from the 1940s. It's like a couple hundred bucks usually. I got it off of Mimi's sister. I don't know how she ended up with it, but we got off of them for not too much money.
That's badass, man.
Dude.
Yeah, it's used to hold like wine and alcohol. Like when you open it, that's what it's for.
Oh.
And I mean, this thing is huge. If anyone's just listening, it's at least, you know, what, 2 foot diameter?
Yeah, it's like a medium-sized medicine ball. Or yeah, like those those massage balls.
Yeah, you guys can only see like the top half on this, but that's the same size going down as well. So I mean, this thing is like 2 foot each way, and probably like maybe 4 foot if you were to stretch it out. Like, this is a big old globe. So like, it's actually all over the place. Tartary, Grand Tartary, Tartaria. Like Chudex was saying, it is in so many places. And when you start to see that, maybe there's a psyop to it, but maybe there is some truth to it. Because we have the words in our language that actually like call out this group that, you know, Tartarians, barbarians. I have that article, WTF is a Tartarian, and I talk a little bit about all the different words in our language, tarred and feathered. You know, it is an insulting thing. So why would that be? Well, if they are the fallen angels escaped from hell, you know, a specific part of hell that made their home, they took over in Tartaria, you know, whatever it was called, they renamed it Tartaria. Well, then you're talking about a whole different scenario, and maybe that's why things have gone downhill, and maybe that's why when we look at the world's fairs, and I know you guys have done a great job on this, so I'll just talk freely as if the audience knows what we're talking about here, is that when they took those 2 years to rebuild, maybe the buildings were already there and they just figured out how to restructure it with what they claimed it was built by, with that plaster and wood, and that it wasn't actually, they were building everything, but they were covering up holes or whatever that might have decayed from age, because these were the fallen who maybe in a previous incarnation they were able to physically move things about, but now they can't, and they're human sized, and they have to use humans to do things. So they can only have a certain capacity of doing things. Well, then it starts making way different sense. The insane asylums busting out in the 1800s, the infantoriums, the orphan trains, they all start making a lot more sense when you talk about, okay, a group of rogue fallen angels were in prison, and then they were set free for whatever reason, because the Bible, this is all biblical, by the way, for the audience, and we'll get into that as we go on, but this is completely by the book, by the Bible, that they would be loosed from the pit to then deceive all the nations, to gather all the people on the earth, which would be the number of sand on the shore, which we have 8 billion people right now. You know, if you're being metaphorical, the number of sand on the shore, the number of people being 8 billion, you know, that kind of fits the bill. and that they would gather Gog and Magog from the four corners of the earth to battle and bring up on the final judgment, which that's what it seems like is going on now, that they're bringing on this fake apocalypse that may actually be bringing on the final judgment. That's is what's happening, in my opinion. So there's a lot to it, and we can go wherever you guys want to from there.
Yeah, it's all, there's so much to it. With your general view of the old world, you know, something that does come up with Tartaria a lot is like Antiquitech, and things like that. Do you think that there's room in your view for there to have been Antiquitech in these past 1,000 years?
Absolutely. Yeah. So when I break down with my series, you know, part two is called Sacred Geometry and Frequencies. And we look at star forts. We look at the windows. Yeah. And I actually acquired this information from watching the Stolen History of Flat Earth, that he put it together for me. And then, you know, it was, I went from there. I didn't steal his stuff or anything, but it was that idea of the sacred geometry, the frequencies, the plates with granulars on them that would restructure themselves. If you're moving the frequency, if you're changing the frequency in a certain way, the, what's the word? I can't even think of it.
Cymatics.
Yeah. The cymatics, and how the windows are all shaped in cymatic patterns, the star forts in cymatic patterns. I mean, then, and we start getting into, well, these cathedrals, right? They are where people go to listen to God. Well, if, okay, we take out the glass, and then we have the wind coming through these specific cymatic pattern shaped windows. Well, then they would hear God's voice, because the wind is the breath of God, right? It's the life of God. So then that starts making a lot of sense. Then you also add in the different pipe organs and how they're pushed up against these windows, and they will come in, and they're actually, they look like very large whistles. If you look at the way that they are, they're set up like whistles. Like if you blow something in them from the top down, they would blow out a noise, that they're not being played like a piano, the way we think of an organ that you play a piano and sound comes out, but actually air enters it and then comes out through the bottom. And there's, some are really thick, some are really thin, some are taller, some are shorter, to make different noises. So then you talk about healing frequencies, because well, firstly, we have to understand that there was a warming period that was happening in the Dark Ages, and we'll get into why it's called the Dark Ages in a bit, but it doesn't make any sense that there would be the quote unquote Dark Ages, but we have a 300-year warming period where the whole earth warms up. And well, they tell us it's 300 years, who knows how long it actually was, but this warming period, that maybe they actually didn't need glass in these windows, and none of these buildings are designed to have heating or air conditioning of any sort, that maybe they were just, it was, I don't know, 80 degrees, or I don't know what temperature it could have been all the time, but it was a temperature that was comfortable enough, and that you would have the windows open because God's talking to you all the time. People are going to these buildings to be healed. Like, hallelujah, praise the Lord, I'm healed. I'm listening to this music being played, this beautiful music that the wind is playing. It's the breath of God. And when you start to put all these pieces together, you realize that there is no other way, that actually what we see in all this old world Antiquitech and old world architecture, it can only actually be this way because the builder of everything was here, and we weren't influenced to force each other to fight and steal and, you know, be egotistical. We didn't have that demonic influence tricking us into and deceiving us into doing these deeds. But instead, we were loving and peaceful, and someone who was greater than us came down here and taught us how to do it, and then we did it. And then, you know, after a time it ran out, and I think the rapture occurred, and that then the fallen angels were released from Tartarus, And that's when Tartaria came about. They were just taking over what was already here.
So this this master builder, if that's what we're calling Jesus, when he came down and taught the whole world how to build like this, I got two questions. Do you think it was what we view as humans like us that did the building? And do you think that it was the teaching was some form of collective consciousness, maybe?
Yes, I think that it was humans. And I don't see, I get a little hazy on how Christ would have shown himself, because I look around now and I see Christ in a lot of different people, you know, but I don't see his physical being here. But so I don't know that Jesus himself came down and taught everybody, but like you said, with the collective conscious understanding that maybe the way that I hear God, and he has me lead my life, like, okay, go do this. And then I go do that. And then it works out for me because I'm listening to the voice inside my head, my moral compass, if you will. We all have that. So I think that maybe to a degree, people with the capability of already, or having the capacity to learn these things, you know, people who are already into building, like, it for me, I haven't built anything in my life. So if I start being told something that's going to confuse me, some kind of things with numbers and building materials, it's not going to mean the same to me as it is going to be to someone who does those types of things. So I think that's how God really works, is he's not a God of confusion, that he's going to talk to the people who are in that field of expertise, and they're going to have the bright idea of, oh, well, let me do this and let me do that. And then we work together, and then voila, you know, it's a masterpiece, because people can only learn what they have the physical capacity to by physically learning things. You know, like all of us here, we're in touch with God in our own unique ways, but we didn't learn about Tartaria until we physically studied it. And I have a lot of Christians who oppose the idea of the Christ millennial kingdom, because they say, I have the Holy Spirit within me and he's never told me anything like that. It's like, well, because he's not a God of confusion. He's not going to confuse you. If you don't have the capacity for it, he's not going to lead you to that well. It's only when you actively seek it out that he'll show you the truth of it. And that's what really counts. So yeah, I think, like you said, it was definitely humans that did it, and that it was a collective working together, that each person had their own specific puzzle piece, and that they had the capacity to learn, and then they put them together.
Yeah
that makes total sense.
Maybe at that point in time, people were much more spiritually in tune and willing to accept a message telling them to do something like that. Our brains have been scrambled for the past, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Well, if you think of they live, like if that were to happen to right now, like we all of a sudden saw the enemy and then the enemy was removed. Like, I think the Christian crusades were something to this degree. Now, I don't know that all of it was that. The Catholic Inquisition, I think, was a perverted version of that. But I think to a degree, the Christian crusades, they were getting rid of these satanic worshiping people who were bringing in the darkness. And this was probably towards the very early stages of Christ's millennial kingdom, is when that actually happened, is that they hunted them down and got rid of them. Well, if we were to witness things like this, like people, all of a sudden we realized that there was some entity among us that wasn't us, that, and we're witnessing supernatural things happening, I think the capacity to listen to the God within you would definitely be a lot stronger than what it currently is.
Yeah, that jives well with, you know, I have to digest things only as much as I can, on the capacities that I can. Last time that you were on here, I think it was, I asked you if you thought that, if you believe that Jesus Christ was a physical man who walked the earth, and I sort of have a hard time with that at this time to believe that. I'm not opposed to it. I mean, I'm a very open-minded person. But when I think of the idea of the return of Christ, it sits a lot better with me today at the idea of Jesus's return would be the idea that enough people or all people knew Jesus, right? Like that we all accepted Jesus. If every human that's alive accepted Jesus Christ into their hearts, then that would be the return of him more than, you know, as I pictured it as a child growing up in a Lutheran church, I pictured him coming down from the clouds and then bringing other people up into the clouds while other people would sink down into the depths of hell. I mean, that was just kind of the image that I got learning this as a child. But now where I'm at today, I'm like, well, I don't know about that, but I do see there to be something truly amazing at the idea of the spirit of Jesus Christ. That's something that I don't know that I have, but I think I could at some point accept into my heart as a matter of truth. And if that's the case, if everyone did that, that seems like a return of Jesus to me.
Yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying. And I think that there is this image that's pushed really hard that Jesus would return in the clouds and people would be caught up in heaven. And I think that did happen. Those two events did happen separately together, however, but that is not necessarily the return. And also we get a lot of people, for whatever reason, we think that he's only going to come twice. We think, you know, the second coming is what people always say, but nowhere in the Bible where Jesus's own words that he say he would only come twice. And when I started out on this, like I told you guys last time, I didn't identify as a Christian, and I wasn't someone who read the Bible, and I didn't really know Jesus. I met Jesus through being psychic and psychedelics and spiritual stuff. I met him there, and he's walked me through a lot of my decision making and all of the things that I was learning. And he would just debunk, you know, for lack of a better word, he would debunk things in my own minds and my thought process of all these spiritual practices. And you know, that's another topic, but I didn't think that he was necessarily human either. And I was trying to figure out like, okay, how could it be? And the more that I've read the Bible now, I run a Bible study every Sunday and I read the Bible every morning myself. The more that I read the Bible, it does pose a lot of questions for me. You know, I'm not going to act like it. I don't have more questions when I'm reading and I don't know how it all fits together with my current understandings. But I do think that Yeshua was fully man and fully God at once, and that it was him being the new Adam, as Paul called him, that he started something new, that he had Christ within him that nobody else had before him. Nobody had a moral compass before him. I think maybe all of creation was physical, that was growing a little bit at a time, and things were happening in different ways. Like Abraham went to sacrifice Isaac, and Isaac was then changed with the ram. But then also Moses next sacrifices his kingship as an Egyptian king in order to spread the word of God. Then you have after him, David sacrifices his royal priesthood and turning his life over to God and gives up everything after he's already king. Because of his closeness to God, then he turned away from God. Then, so he sacrificed all that. He got it back. Then Jesus sacrifices himself. Yeshua sacrifices himself, his own body. And it's like the same things are always occurring and recurring in new and different ways. But you can see the growth from, okay, I had to physically sacrifice my son, to now what we have to do is just sacrifice our wants and needs of this egotistical world of, you know, things that aren't good for us. That's where we sacrifice, and it grew that way. But it was Christ, and I love this one verse in the Bible where he says, I am like a piece of wheat. If you have just one piece of wheat, you have one piece of wheat. But if you are to break it up and then let it go in the wind, then you have many seeds go out all over. And that to me is him saying that he had God within him and a moral compass and nobody else did. And he said, my followers will do things greater than I, meaning that he was the first to have the Holy Spirit within him, and that his death then gave us the capacity to know God within ourselves. And as soon as he died, that started transforming his disciples, as Peter says, that they were turned to living stones, because they were stones, you know, physical beings, that then the Holy Spirit came in them, and now they're living stones because now they have life within them. They know Christ within themselves. So I do think that he was a physical person who was physically tortured and sacrificed himself for the greater good. And maybe he didn't understand everything he was doing and why he was doing it in the moment. He was very human as he called out to God and said, why have you forsaken me? When he was, some of his last words on the cross, but he also had God within him that nobody else did before him. And now we are amalgamations of physical creation and the Spirit, the Holy Spirit within all of us. And we are fighting that battle. And I think it's like the final stages for where we all finally realize, like, forget about this physical creation. We want to be living peacefully and loving and all that. And that's where we don't, you know, we're past the time of Christ's millennial kingdom, but we're about to enter into the final white throne judgment, which then leads into the eternal state, which is heaven, you know, heaven on earth, New Jerusalem, however someone wants to word it, new heaven, new earth, is that we live like we would in heaven on earth. So therefore, when we die, we don't suffer death. We just step out of these bodies and continue living on the same way we have been living. And that is what eternal life is, that, you know, they say in the Bible, he was the cornerstone that was rejected, which then becomes the capstone. So you imagine a pyramid, you know, you have the cornerstone, he was rejected. So then he becomes the capstone. He becomes the highest that someone could possibly achieve. But once you achieve the state equal to him, then he becomes your cornerstone and your building block. So you're in this pyramid, right? This pyramid scheme that we're stuck in. He's the top. He's the mediator that gets you from this pyramid scheme to the next spot. So you have to use him as your building block to have Christ within you to understand how you're supposed to live in heaven. And if you don't have his sense, his essence in you of loving people and correcting things that are wrong and having compassion for everybody, no matter where they are, and being a servant of mankind, if you don't have those foundational principles in yourself, well, then you don't get to go on to heaven. That you do have an ego death and you're stuck in this pyramid scheme. And maybe you get another chance to in hell where we are to correct it. But you have to use his teachings as your cornerstone in order to then go into the heavenly state.
It's a lot.
Yeah. Sorry, I do get wordy sometimes.
No worries, man. No.
Love it.
Yeah.
So there were, I have a short list of words.
Yeah, that's all right with you, Paul. You just go for it, man. I'm kind of here to listen. So
okay. So
sorry,
Dirk. Because I listened to your 8-part, and there were some words that came up quite a bit that I wasn't really familiar with. You know, some of these are names. And I wrote this down. I'm sure I misspelled it, but the Quetzalcoatl.
Yeah, sometimes it's pronounced just Quetzalcoatl. Is how I've heard Latino speakers pronounce it. So maybe it's the American in me that puts the AL on the end, but that's how I always heard it before that. But yeah, it's Quetzalcoatl is how I know him as.
And now that's, was it South American or?
Well, yeah, he's a Mayan.
What's on the Mexican flag, right? The eagle with the snake, the serpent.
Yes.
Yeah, to a degree. And you have Amaruca in there, which is America. Amaruca is actually, it's very fascinating that there is a mythological beast called Amaruca, which is a two-headed being. It's a serpent and an eagle. And when you have North America, South America, you know, you have North Amaruca and South Amaruca, you have the two-headed beast that we see the double-headed eagle in all these secret societies. You have in Ohio, they have the serpent mounds that are shaped in a large, very large snake. And, you know, there's so many different things, the eagle and the serpent symbolism that always seem to be competing, Enki and Enlil, so many different things that seem to be competing. But like Andy Rouse always says, they seem to be brothers or family that are just like jockeying for a position. And when you come across what Amaruca means, then it's like, whoa, okay, that's probably what it is. And that's Quetzalcoatl. He was this two-headed being, that he was man, but he was also a feathered serpent. And it was a two-headed thing. You see him depicted. These depictions are crazy. It's him and a snake. They're one and the same. And he has so many characteristics that are like Jesus and or Yeshua, I should say, the way he was born of a virgin. He was half God, half human, you know, but it's always an inverted or perverted way of what happened with Yeshua is what all these deities are, you know, Mithras, Dionysius, you can go on Nimrod, the date, you know, which is a made up thing. Dates didn't actually exist way back when we talk about Mithras and, you know, the Gregorian calendar where we get December 25th, that wasn't a thing up until like the 1500s. So anytime people say that, oh, those deities were born on December 25th, like it's completely untrue. It's unfounded in any understanding because there was no December 25th until like the 1500s. So
would that be based more, you think, when they throw a date there like that? And even with Jesus, do you think it has more to do with like the solar, yes, the solar minimum that would be experienced, you know, around the 21st to 23rd, and then a couple more days beyond that, once people could see that the sun was returning?
Yeah. Well, it's very interesting because I schooled Mike Adank on this. He didn't even know this. He's an astrotheologist. That it's actually, so the sun raises half a degree. And so the 22nd and 23rd, it raises 1 degree. So you can see it move. Or I'm sorry. You can't see it move. And this was so long ago that I had this on, but you can't see it move every day, but it does move every day. But it's so minute that it appears to be in the same spot, but it's on the third day that you finally, or the fourth day, actually, you would finally see it move, but it's been moving the entire time. So it's funny where people, they just get told something from someone and they don't actually look into it. And then they run with that. And then they, you know, they go around talking about, oh, it's only the sun that they're talking about, but yeah, all these other things that they're talking about that never mention anything about astrology, you know, that doesn't fit into my narrative. So I don't talk about that. So it's funny. You know, I'm not here to bust on a Freemason or anything, but
yeah, Adam and Mike aren't tight.
Yeah.
By my books. I could imagine.
Yeah. He seems like a bit of a shill, but who cares? I'm just thinking in the sense of people coming up with dates for any deities or anything, because the calendar is a joke, mm-hmm, as far as I'm concerned. And I know you know that with all the missing years, the I or the J in place of the one. Like, I question calendars. I mean, so much. It's unbelievable. In fact, I want to understand calendars better, but that's a whole different subject. But I would think that something that I do believe in general is what like Crow calls the sky clock. And I mean, I think that the sky clock is solid and it's always been there.
Yep.
And I think anything that's been written down throughout time. Anything that can exist that has been written would be based more on a sky clock type of system. And that would be based on things like, you know, solar minimums, equinoxes, solar maximums, eclipses, things like that. And it wouldn't have a date. I mean, at best, if you're looking for a date, say something, you figure that something is based around an eclipse, you might try and figure out how many eclipses ago that was. And according to, I mean, not my science, but like what NASA would tell us the science is for when these eclipses would have happened, right. Which I'm not just throwing NASA out there, you know, like, I mean, I'm sure that people of ancient understood their eclipses and their timings and things like that.
Oh yeah.
But I don't, and neither does my neighbor. And I know that my neighbor's turning entirely to NASA for that. Mm-hmm. So I think that even like trying to figure that stuff out today could be obscured and incorrect.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely, if you want to research actually calendars, I would start with the Book of Enoch. There's a whole big section in there about calendars and how he kept track of time. And there were 360 numbered days, but there were 4 days, the solstices and equinoxes. There were 4 days that were named days. And then there was one day of the Lord, which was the day of that they would reset everything. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting. People talk about it. There was only 360 days at some point. I disagree. I think that there were 360 numbered days that the calendar, when they talk about 13 months, you know, you look at Ethiopia's calendar now of 13 months.
Well, do they still run that right now?
Yeah. Yeah. And 1 month is only 5 days. That's not how Enoch carried his calendar. He talks about that there were some months had 29 days, some had 30 days, but they were all fairly equal. They weren't just 12 months of 30 days and 1 month of 5 days the way it is now. But yeah, there's a lot of weird stuff with the Ethiopian Enoch. I think that's where he was actually from.
What do they call their 13th month?
I forget. I don't know the name of it.
And they're all divided. Are they divided up equally instead of between 12 and 13 instead of 12?
No. So there's 12 months of 30 days and then okay, 1 month of 5 days.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's like wild. Another perversion though.
So because, you don't think that's what's really being talked about in the Book of Enoch?
Yeah, no, he says specifically that some months were 29 days and some months were 30. That there wasn't a day of a month of 5 days, but it's, you know, the way everything's given to us. He says there are 360 numbered days and that there were 4 days that had names, that because these are their own deities, that there's actually beings, you know, the sky is a clock, but it's also it's being maneuvered, that there are beings that are watching the earth called the watchers. They are the stars, they are the sun, there's these celestial bodies. And there is actually two different deities that would split the responsibility of the sun. One was named Tomas and one was named something else. There were like 4 deities that shared the moon and they would split these duties. And so 4 days, the 2 equinoxes and the 2 solstices, they were actually named days. They were these holidays or holy days, as we would call them, or we would call them holidays, but they were holy days. And that there was one day, it was called the Reckoning of the Lord, which is when everything would reset itself. And that would be like the last day of the year, which like we call New Year's.
Yeah. So check it out. So according to a Google search, in Ethiopia, the first month of the year is September.
September 11th.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. You guys didn't know that? Oh, yeah. That's in my Book of Enoch series. I break that down a little bit.
And the last 13th month of the year is Pagu Mien, which comes after August. Each month has 30 days from September to August. And the 13th month, Pagu Mien, has 5 days, 6 in a leap year.
Oh, you want to hear something interesting? So their first day of the year is September 11th for us, but it's September 1st for them. So they're 10 days behind us, as well as 8 years. Well, it's not always 8 years. It's like 7 years and some odd months. But the Mayan calendar on it ended right December 21st, 2012. Everyone's familiar with that, the Mayan calendar. Well, in the Ethiopian calendar, December 21st, 2012 was actually December 31st, 2019 for us. So the first day of 2020 was beyond the calendar of the Mayans.
That's pretty intriguing.
Yeah, fascinating.
Yeah, there's so many crazy things about calendars, man. Like, I feel like just the Gregorian calendar on its own, I feel like we're looking at like relics of either multiple or an old system that used to be there. Like, you know, it's not too original, but like one thing that I've thought is like months, shouldn't those be moons? Months, you know, like one moon is a month. And, you know, then you look at like some of the names, like September and October, Sept and Oct being 7 and 8, and they're right next to each other, but there are 9th and 10th months, you know, and then
November and December. Yeah, they're 9 and 10.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's like, I think that there's like a lot to learn from it, or, you know, a lot to like, if someone were to have the right mind for it and study it hard enough, they might be able to find some hidden keys to our past or something to that effect.
Well, if you were to take, so when we look at the North hemisphere and the Southern hemisphere, the reason why there's a September, and this is actually Jesus's birth was probably September 11th of our calendar, September 1st down there, but
that's like really mind blowing right there. The whole September 11th.
I've never heard anybody say that before.
That's
such a, it goes right along with the whole perversion thing though.
September 11th, 2001 might have been an anniversary that they were, you know, celebrating in their own way. And, you know, there's a whole theory to that with the 1,000 years, you know, missing time, that might have been the day that Satan was actually loosed from the pit. That was their celebration. They were mocking Jesus again. But Jesus was probably conceived on December 25th or thereabouts. And then nine full months later would have been September 11th.
Okay. Oh yeah, I think I heard you say that at some point, that Jesus may have been conceived at the time that we celebrate Christmas or whatever.
So September 11th, 2001 may have been the festival of Satan being released onto the world as we know it today.
Yeah. Y2K.
Wow.
Yeah, the beginning of the next generation, maybe. Yeah, it's some weird stuff. And I mean, I can't disprove it. I can't prove it either. But, you know, it's the one of the most remembered days. Never forget, you know, what's the PSYOP there? Never forget what day that was when they took over the United States, for sure. Like, they were definitely already leading up to it. But that's the day that they definitely took over and they got rid of anyone who disagreed. But so what I was saying was, so September down there is actually, because they're in the Southern hemisphere, that's their first day, that's spring for them. But for us, March, like the end of March or the beginning of April, would actually be the first month of the year. Then you have April Fool's Day. It's like, whoops, yep, that used to be day one of the year, but not anymore. You know, you've all been fooled. And if you count the calendar that way from April going forward, well, then it would be 7 and 8, 9 and 10, just like you said, with September, October, November, December. And then, but so it would be like the end of March, actually. So it's kind of really messed up, because the beginning of spring is usually like, what, March 19th to 22nd, something like that. So, and it would be Nisan 14 is when Jesus was born, but he was born probably in the Southern hemisphere, which gives them, you know, their Nisan 14 would be September 11th to us. So there's this whole perversion with time and the way they keep track of things. But like I was saying, with the day of the reckoning, or the reckoning of the Lord, that day would probably be called Sunday, right? Because that's the sun's day, because even though it's not sun worship, it's the celestial body. It's the equivalent to Christ in the celestial body form, whereas Christ as man, you know, he would be one of us. And then you have, that would probably be the first day. And then you have every 4 years, you would have moon day, because the moon has four phases to it. So it would get its own day once every 4 years, a leap year. So I think Enoch really kept track of time the same number of days that we do. And it's just been perverted, and we're told we're on a tilt and all that just to mess everything up. And there's different things thrown in, Ragnarok events and all that we're told made the Earth. But the Earth's not a spinning sphere. So anytime I hear something with a spinning sphere, I'm like, yeah, I'm not buying it, because I look at the sky, I see it's a clock and it's moving, and it's predictable. And I see all these different experiments that happen. And I'm like, okay, I think that we're on a flat, immovable surface. The Bible says, you know, talk to Josh Monday and he'll talk to you for 3 hours about all the different Bible references about flat Earth. It's incredible the amount of flat Earth references in the Bible. And then I'm like, okay, but they always do word magic, right? It's the atmosphere. So there's the outermost sphere that goes around us because we're in a firmament, because it talks about that. And actually, Chud, you sent me something earlier that was talking about the firmament.
Yeah, yeah.
In the newspaper,
I'm glad you noticed that word just right there in the middle of that in an 1859 newspaper.
Yeah, 1859, another significant year, the Carrington event, which actually goes with the Christ Millennial Kingdom, if we want to work back into that way. I know that you said you had some questions about that, if you want to get into that a little bit.
I have so many questions about it, but I don't even know what those questions are just yet. I was telling Adam on our last episode, we didn't have a guest and we were just kind of shooting the shit. And I'd heard Howdy Mikowski mention that there was no mention of the Carrington event before like the year 2000 or 2004, some date like that.
Really? Was that that long ago? Or I mean, that short, that close of a time period? I watched that same video, but that I didn't remember hearing.
No, I haven't watched that video. You told me about the video. I haven't seen that yet.
Okay.
I'm really looking forward to it, because this is when he was on with False Reality Check.
Oh, I gotta check that one out.
And he just kind of mentioned it like kind of offhand. And I learned about the Carrington event like probably about 2004 or so, watching the History Channel or Nova or some unreliable source of stuff that I thought made me smart back then. And it was a program about the sun, and it talked about the Carrington event and how it wiped out all the telegraph systems. And if it happened today, it would be absolutely devastating, because it would wipe out all of our electrical grids and all of this. And I took it in, and then in more recent time, I haven't brought it up too often, but I think of it, I'm not anti-crypto, but I'm not the biggest crypto guy. And my biggest reasoning behind that is in my head, I think, you know, because what if the Carrington event happens and we have no electrical ability to, you know, I'm not going to put all of my wealth into something that could, if the grid goes down, and in my head, I'm thinking Carrington event, then I, you know, that just doesn't seem like a good idea.
I'm right there with you.
So I like think about this thing all the time. I've mentioned it throughout the years to people. It's one of those ones that like no one ever seems to know what the fuck you're talking about when you bring it up. They're just like, what? And you tell them and they go, huh, I'll be damned. You know, and that's that. But he said that it had never been mentioned before, like 2000 or 2001, something like that. And I was like, that's interesting, you know, put that in the back of my head. And when I got home from work that day, I went straight to my 1958 set of encyclopedias and went to Carrington. And sure enough, Richard Carrington's in there, but no mention of this event, just that he was someone who studied the sun. And that really got my mind going. Unfortunately, I'm busy as shit, so I haven't been researching crap lately, but I did have a little breadcrumb suggesting that it was written about in the Baltimore Advertiser, whatever that newspaper was called. It was like the Baltimore Commercial and Advertiser Daily, something like that. And I found their archive, and I went to September 3rd of 1859, And I had to go through such a long newspaper, but then sure enough, right there, Aurora Borealis. And that's the picture that I sent to you.
Mm.
And, you know, of course that doesn't mention electricity at all. Just that how magnificent the Aurora Borealis was at that time.
That's fascinating. Yeah. I have to look into it a little more. I'll tell you where I first got, that name was I came across Suspicious Observers on YouTube. He is a guy, but he's like a guy that battles NASA. He's, you know, one of these awake type of guys, but he's a real scientist. His name's Ben Davidson. He has scientific textbooks that he puts out, but he was always battling, you know, climate scientists. So I don't know that he's a psyop or anything. He has like 600,000 subscribers on YouTube. He does a daily show, like 3-5 minutes long, going over science papers and weather events and all that. Well, he often talks about, and I say all that just to, you know, give a little background on the guy, not to say you should trust him or shouldn't trust him, but okay. He's a guy that I learned the Carrington event from because he does all these disaster breakdowns. He does a lot of videos with Randall Carlson, you know, their buddies. And he talks about how the Earth's magnetic atmosphere dropped 25% during the Carrington event. And then, like, since then, it's been on a steady decline that we're at our weakest point. And it's, you know, some kind of event happened in 1859, September 1st and 2nd, 1859, that weakened our whatever it was. You know, there was something. And so I had that in the background of my mind for the last couple of years, at least. And then when I started researching Tartaria, you know, it just kept popping up in my mind. It's like the Carrington event, there's something about. Then weird stuff started popping up. Like 1860 is when anxiety became a thing. And like 1865, depression became a thing. And I'm like, well, that's weird. It's like something happened with the electric atmosphere that started changing humanity, and it started doing things for the negative. And then I get into this Tartaria stuff, and that's when it really started piecing it together. It's like there's something with the Carrington event. You know, Michelle Gibson always talks about the 1850s were like the starting point. And then I look into the Carrington event a little bit more, and not to the degree that you're talking about, or the angle that Howdy takes with it anyway, with trying to figure out who was talking about it and when they were talking about, just trying to figure out what it actually was. And they say it was some kind of solar storm, some kind of lightning storm, that people that were working the telegraph systems, they were shocked by, like, literally they felt physical shock in their bodies by this magnetic event, whatever it was, this electrical event. So when I start thinking, I'm like, about Christ's millennial kingdom, I'm like, that would be the rapture point. If there were some kind of switcheroo where, you know, these fallen angels were released from Tartarus and the saints. So, let me back it up just a little bit. When I heard about Christ's millennial kingdom, I came across this YouTube channel, Exploring Tartaria. This woman was really studying, and I mean, she does a lot of really great videos, like probably 8 on her channel, but they're really, really well done.
What's her name?
Exploring Tartaria.
Okay.
And she was a woman who was just studying Tartaria, and then she became a Christian in a sense, and then she became Catholic. She came to the idea that Catholicism was a thing that existed prior to what we know now, that it was actually Christ's millennial kingdom, and it was the combining of church and state was the Catholic religion, that it was the one world in a positive way. It was the one world shared knowledge base of this is going to be the rules we live by, and this is why we live by them, which has now been infiltrated by the serpents. And that they have really just perverted it so that people, because what they do is they always pervert the things that are the most true. So her take was, okay, let me study that. So she became Catholic, and I'm not suggesting anyone become Catholic because they do a lot of really messed up stuff. But yeah, so she has the one video that talks about the saints, and there's all these people that are always depicted with halos around their heads. And so I'm like, well, where did the saints go? And like, there was some kind of switcheroo where the fallen angels came in and the saints went away. And then I start playing with the idea that, okay, that would be the rapture event. If Christ's millennial kingdom happened, then obviously there would have been an antichrist that would have needed to exist, which was Quetzalcoatl. As we, I didn't say that earlier when you asked the question, but Quetzalcoatl to me is the quote unquote antichrist, the son of perdition, the seed of Satan, which is a Leviathan, which is a serpent and mixed with a human. That he was born of a virgin. So
Anton LaVey, I never put those two words together. Ooh. Leviathan and LaVey.
Yeah. Leviathan. Yeah,
wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, that they always do that. And you put the last name first, right? In school it would be LaVey Anton. Leviathan, the satanic.
Yeah. Whoa.
Yeah,
that's right there.
It's always right there when you look, man, at it.
I'm catching up, Andy Rouse and Dan Anaki. Not even close.
Yeah, it takes a lot of studying. But okay, so how could it be the rapture event? If that was the rapture event, or I mean, so there would have been an antichrist, there would have been some kind of event. Now, a lot of people think that there's going to be a post-tribulation rapture or pre-tribulation or mid-tribulation rapture. There's a lot of argument against amongst Christians of the 7-year tribulation, there's going to be this rapture event. None of that is biblical. That's just, you know, people interpreting it that way. But it does say at some point that there is going to be a separation of the wheat and the tares, but it says that the tares would be taken out of here. Well, that would lead into Christ's millennial kingdom, that the weeds would be taken out to leave the wheat alone, which is what happened with Christ's millennial kingdom. But it does say that the people would be caught up into the sky with what you were talking about earlier, Chuddex, to meet Christ in this midway point where he's descending to earth, and there these saints are ascending from earth. There would be that point. So I think that was the rapture, that somehow, you know, these fallen angels were released from Tartarus. They create Tartaria as their throne on earth, and that the saints that were here, all the people of Christ, were then caught up to heaven. They left this magnetic sphere that we are in, and they met Christ, and now they're all in this heavenly throne reigning over the earth, watching us, the remnants of the fallen angels, essentially, is what we are, in my opinion. And we can get into that, you know, later after we finish this. But okay, now, is there biblical ties to this possibly being the rapture event? Well, there actually is a very significant tie-in. In Jeremiah, and I forget the chapter, I'm pretty sure it's Jeremiah, there's this 70-year, 5-month prophecy that Babylon would be ruling the earth. There's actually one time he says 70 years, 7 months. Another time he says 70 years and 5 months. And to me, when I started looking at historical events, there is actually an event that lines up that 70 years and 5 full months before the Carrington event. And that was the day that the Constitution was enacted, was March 3rd, 1789. It was started to be written in 87. It was voted on in 88, and it was instituted March, of course. It would have to be March, you know, because that's the beginning, like we just talked about earlier. It would be March 3rd, 1789, is exactly 70 years and like 5 months and like 28 days before September 1st, 1859, when the Carrington event happened. So talk about a biblical prophecy being fulfilled. And what that 70 years and 5 months is that Babylon would rule over Israel. So I think that was the final piece of Christ's millennial kingdom. And that is when these satanic worshipers that were somehow in communication with the fallen angels that were in, locked in Tartarus, that they were doing rituals. And that's another thing I meant to say earlier, is that all these deities are said to be born on these these dates, but we know they do rituals on certain dates. So maybe the spirit of, you know, the Antichrist took over Nimrod on December 25th or took over Mithras on December 25th. Doesn't mean they were born, but maybe the spirit of evil was born into them, that they call God, was born into them on that specific day. And that's why they worship it the way that they do. So, you know, it just, it lines up exactly. And I think that was the last, that the tribulation, I think, was in there somewhere. I think it was like in the 1812 to 1819 was probably some kind of 7-year tribulation with the New Madrid earthquakes in 1811 and 1812, reversed the Mississippi River for 3 days, created new waterfalls, very biblical event, in the same place that the Mormon religion actually believes was the Garden of Eden. Or just about, they believe Jackson, Missouri was the Garden of Eden, and the New Madrid earthquakes happened in New Madrid, Missouri, on the Mississippi River. So, you know, not very far from there. So that's a very biblical thing. You had the War of 1812, the World War, you know, 1812 to 1815. You had two volcanoes that went off in 1814 and 1815, Mount Tambora being 1815, which caused the year without a summer in 1816, which then caused all sorts of disease and famine, which is all biblical. And Jesus says there's going to be wars, rumors of war. There's going to be earth changes, earthquakes, volcanoes. There's going to be the sun blackened out, the moon you won't see. There's going to be stars that fall from heaven. You have November 12th, 1833, the Leonid meteor shower, 100,000 stars are falling, appear to be falling to Earth. Then you have all the pictures in the 1840s, 50s, and 60s of all these cities that seem to be empty. Was that because they went underground? Because there was some kind of, I believe, there was some kind of larger sun that went around the outer ring that we know as Antarctica. That was actually somehow, it was called the sevenfold sun, which is actually biblical as well. Isaiah 27. I believe it's in, where the sun would grow seven times larger than its size, and that the moon would then become the sun. So when we look at our sun, I think that used to be the moon, and the moon that we have is a false structure, and that the sun that we used to have became the sevenfold sun, which then exploded. But when you look at the Ottoman Empire, their flag is actually, I believe, our sun, which was the moon, going in front of the larger sun, which was seven times larger than it. And there's actually crop circles that depict a sevenfold sun. There's actually a historical event in 1661 where someone saw a sevenfold sun. And that's around the time when I think that it expanded. And then at some point it exploded and started falling to Earth and making all these meteors and these nano diamonds, these glass, you know, this mud flood event that would have occurred because of things heating up and hitting the Earth in certain ways. This is all fulfilled with, I mean, it's biblical prophecy, it's history, but it's just, you have to read between the lines and put it together in a way that most people don't. And that's where I really break down my series, is I put the evidence along with the biblical words, the prophetic words of Christ himself, the prophetic words of all these Old Testament prophets. That's what I do in this series, is I show you how the Bible is legit by matching it with historical events that have occurred. And if they are all true events that occurred, and if all these words are biblical prophecy and they all fit together, well, then we have to be in the season of Satan, the short season of Satan, when he'd be loosed from the pit. And you look around and we have satanic worshipers running the whole world. I mean, the White House, everywhere. There are these Satanists, these Luciferians that are running everything. And that's exactly what would be done. So to me, when I have all the evidence that I have, you know, that all the stuff that I brought here, and there's many more things that we haven't touched on, and, you know, maybe we get to it, maybe not, but so much stuff is in that 8-part series, and I have even more that I'm going to add on once I have time to do so. But when you have all this evidence, you come to no other conclusion than Christ's millennial kingdom happened and that we're in Satan's short season.
How long is this the short season of Satan?
Well, it doesn't say, but it's, you can maybe extract, and this is obviously interpretation, you can extract a little bit. Peter says that a day to the Lord is like 1,000 years to humans.
Yeah, I think I asked you this last time you were on, but yeah, go again.
Yeah, and that a season, we have 4 seasons, so you break it down into quarters. So that maybe it would be 250 years, which is actually how long these quote unquote past civilizations would survive, was approximately 250 years. And 250 years ago, well, it's like 246 years ago is when the Declaration of Independence was signed, right? So we're right at that buffer zone, and we have Agenda 2030, which is probably going to send whoever is going to Mars or to the metaverse, you know, that they're going to go to Tartarus and they're going to, you know, be, who knows what's going to happen there, but that I think that we're in that last period before the white throne judgment, that I don't know how else to say it, but it's going to be the judgment that everyone expects that happens at the end of your death. You know, you either go to heaven or hell. I don't think that that happens for every single person's death. I think that happens. That's an event. That's a judgment that happens at the end, right before the eternal state, that everyone goes to a waiting period that we all hang out in. It's the spiritual realm that we all hang out in, but there's different sides to it. People are waiting on different things, but they can see each other, communicate with each other, communicate with us, because it's just on the other side of physicality. You know, it's not really, they can see us and interact with us, but they're not supposed to. And, you know, there's certain rules that they have to live by, but it's all like right around us. And so when we have psychics and mediums, that's why they're able to communicate with different things, is, and they're led to believe that, oh no, everyone goes to heaven, but they're not understanding that this around us isn't heaven. That's just the spiritual world. And you go there when you die as a waiting period, and then at some point heaven opens up, and whoever goes to heaven, and whoever doesn't, I don't know what happens to them. I don't know if there is a hell in the terms of burning forever. You know, I had the idea that maybe if you were in somewhere so cold that causes frostbite, that maybe like we look at space, and maybe space is that prison that I was talking about, where the fallen angels are the 7 main transgressors, as the Book of Enoch says, are the 7 planets that revolve around the sun, or maybe worship the sun, as they're locked in orbit or locked in chains, and their heavenly bodies are worshiping, made to worship the heavenly body of Christ, which is the sun. You know, that if someone was to go into space, if they could get through the firmament in some way, and they were to get into space, that maybe they would be frozen, and their spirit would be frozen, and they would be inside of a rock or a meteor that just floated around out there, and they would be burning eternally because it's so cold. Not that they would go to a place of eternal hellfire, that it would actually just burn so much because they are in space, quote unquote space, floating around without able to be warm again, so that it's warmed by the sun's light, by Christ's love, that they couldn't feel that anymore. So maybe that is what hell is, and that we're reminded of what we come from, that we're the light that's cast down from these heavenly bodies that we know as planets, which earlier I said Enoch knew as the Watchers, which then ancient civilizations called the Wandering Stars, which were wandering about in all different ways. And then at some point they were all locked into place, locked into chains. Enoch says for 10,000 years in the 5th heaven, because there's 7 heavens in the Book of Enoch. There's a lot to it, but I think that's a reminder of where we come from. And once we do what our heavenly bodies are locked in chains to do, like Chudex talked about earlier, when we worship Christ in us. And when we invite Christ in us and act like him, when all of us do that, or at least enough of us do that, that is the judgment. And I think we judge ourselves, and we're going through this transformation of judgment period. And then at some point, it's going to be like, okay, enough's enough. You know, I'm your father and you're my children. And now I've given you plenty of opportunity, but now it's time to either buck up or nut up. You know, you got to either do it or you don't. And now I'm coming to judge what's in your heart and your mind. And if you don't have it, then you don't live on. I'm sorry, but this is the choice that you've made.
Wow, man. You make a very compelling case, I must say.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
There's so much in there. I do have to, you know, it's my own critical mind. I gotta point something out or ask something. I'm not sure the right way to phrase this, but with all these, with the very compelling events that you talk about of the past, there's this seed of doubt in my mind always when I think about any events of the past, you know, whether it be the Carrington event, or even better is to talk about any of the plagues or disease from the past. Well, right now, what we just went through or what we're going through right now in the history books is going to appear as though we had a massive plague that struck down, you know, 2/3 of the population. I don't know how it'll be written, but if the writers of history as it is right now get their way, that's what it's going to do. Mm-hmm. And the three of us right here know that hasn't happened as of yet. But it's very possible that just these last 2 years, 2020 through 2022, it could be written in books in 100 years from now that we lost 1/3 of the population or something to that effect. And when we examine all of these events from the past, you know, I just, there's this part of my brain that's all the way through. I'm not when you're talking, because I'm so compelled by what you're talking about. But then when I stop and I examine any of those events individually, I'm not sure what did and didn't happen. You know, like I'm super compelled. Like when we talk about like the New Madrid earthquakes, for instance, like that's some like mind blowing stuff. The idea of rivers flowing backwards for, I mean, what was it, like 3 days?
Yeah, the Mississippi River.
Right. Like that's like unbelievable. And then I go, well, wait, is it unbelievable because it didn't happen, but it was something that I don't know, some powers that be wanted us to believe did happen at that time, you know, like, I'm not saying that we should never, cause like you could easily get with what I'm saying. Well, I guess we just shouldn't look at history, you know, cause it could all be bullshit. I mean, I'm intrigued. The reason that I'm like that right now or these days is because I've always been an amateur history, like enthusiast. Like I've been compelled about ancient civilization for as long as I can remember. And it really ramped up like 10 years ago with, I introduced Graham Hancock into my understanding of the world. And it was just like, whoa, right. Yeah, we're missing something, you know, and I've been on that path. I was on that path really solidly until a couple of years ago when I started really flipping everything on its head and being like, no, wait. Maybe everything that I just spent the last 10 years being really into is a bunch of fabrication.
Yeah. Yeah. And that it's not actually super old. It's actually very recent and it just appears to be super old.
Right.
Yeah.
So
no, I agree with you with all the events and all, and you know, who am I to say what happened or not? So I don't take offense to any of it. So it's to me when I'm just trying to line up the events that are in our known history, because what Satan can do is he can manipulate and he can change and perverse and inverse and alterate what is there, but he can't create from scratch. He can't just full out give a lie. Like he can manipulate the numbers, you know, like what we just experienced the last 2 years. and they can say it was worse. It can be exaggerated to many different degrees, you know, all sorts of different things. Who knows, even if the Spanish flu was the way that it was and the Titanic, as many people were on there. And yeah, it's always good to have a skeptical, healthy skepticism between what we're doing. But I just line up the events that are fulfilled. These prophetic words were fulfilled. And there's also Tecumseh's comet or Napoleon's comet that I forgot to mention was 1811, 1812, which was 260 days. It was visible around the earth, 17 months. It was visible, not with the naked eye, but I don't even know how they saw if they didn't have telescopes, but I've seen both of those different numbers. That would be like the heavenly bodies were shaken, you know, that things were moving and so many different weird things. But so when I see that all the prophetic words have been answered and that we're not told that in our mainstream history, I'm like, okay, they left that there for a reason, because they took out 66 books of the Bible, but they left these prophetic words by Jesus and saying what would happen. Now, there's certain things that can't be alterated, that God will not let Satan do. You know, when he allowed Satan to mess with Job, he wasn't allowed to kill him, right? There's certain things that God won't allow Satan to do. And we can all see in our own lives that, you know, a pissed off driver can flip us the bird, but they're not going to just pull out a shotgun because we cut them off and blast us away. You know, there's certain things that God will allow. And I'm not saying that hasn't happened or doesn't happen or anything, but I'm just using that as an example, that there's certain things that God will allow to happen and certain things God won't allow to happen. So I think that these events, these prophetic words by Jesus, are there to be found for a reason. And I think these prophetic events are I'm confusing my words here. These historical events and these prophetic words are each there to be found, to be put together so that we can understand that the Christ's millennial kingdom happened, because we didn't even talk about his return. This isn't something I'm greatly studied in that I have to actually do a part on, is that in 66 AD, there's four historians. None of them are Christian. They're all either Jewish or Roman. Josephus being one of them, Tacitus being another, and there's two others that I'm not familiar with their names off the top of my head, but they claim that they saw heavenly armies surround cities the way in 66 AD, the way it's described in the Bible, that they would be surrounded, that these principalities would be surrounded and taken out of power, and that there was actually some kind of star that made a sword shape. But what's the shape of a sword? You know, I got the sword back here, but that's a cross. But these non-Christian writers, authors, historians that are quoted many times over in mainstream history, they call it a sword, but it very likely could have been a cross that was in the sky for a year, just in the same place for 1 year straight, which is actually biblical, where it says something about a double-edged sword. You would see the double-edged sword. So I'm not greatly studied into this part of it, but there is a beginning part to fulfill the beginning parts of Christ's millennial kingdom. And the last thing I'll say is that so again, you know, I don't agree with time. I don't know the years. I just know what we're given, and I think, like I was just saying, that things have to be left for us to find, that Satan can scatter the puzzle pieces all over, but he can't do away with them altogether. So we have the Dark Ages, everything's inverted and perverted. If Christ's millennial kingdom happened, then it would be during the time that, if we're in the time of Satan, it would be called the Dark Ages. And that happens from years approximately 500 to 1500. So why it's called that is because there was no quote unquote scientific advances. So science is the religion of Lucifer, trying to solve everything of creation through physical means and trying to keep God out of it. That is what Lucifer would do. So what happens, what's it called, immediately following the Dark Ages is the Enlightenment era. You know, the bringer of light, Lucifer, the bringer of light, the Statue of Liberty. I mean, there's so many different things with that. But there was the fall of Rome in, quote unquote, 476 AD. And approximately 50 years before the final fall, there was a pope named Pope Sixtus III. So Sixtus actually means six. So you have Pope 666, you know, Pope Sixtus III was actually there for an 8-year period. You know, there's so many weird things. And again, we don't know that these events are all completely true. We don't know the years to be true. They could be manipulated in all sorts of ways. But to answer in a very long-winded way about what you're saying with these events, I don't know that they happened, and I'm not claiming that they actually did happen. But I think that the hint, the puzzle piece being available for us is for a reason, because I look at life as a big test and a big puzzle piece that we have to figure things out and we have to communicate with each other. So I think everyone should be very skeptical of everything I say, and you should look into all these things for your own self. You shouldn't just blindly believe me, because I could have made up all this stuff. You have to really look at it all for yourself to know what it is. And even then, when you look it up, it may all be false. So who knows what it is, but this is just what I've been led to on my journey and what I've been guided to study and share. So that's why I feel so confident, is because, you know, a multitude of reasons, but I just have this firm understanding now. And whether it's completely false or completely true, I couldn't verify for you, but I, again, like Pilate asked right before Jesus was crucified, what is truth?
Yeah, it's, you know, for one, three things I could say in response is, one, if you know these things to be true in your heart, then you know. So there's that. And then two, it's very compelling to me that all of these events, I think all, for the most part, all of what you've talked about as these events, they're all things that are obscured. I know about them because I get into this stuff, because I look for the weird right. shit, and I know about them. But like I said about the Carrington event, that's, I've mentioned it to people for years, and I don't think until really recently, I don't think anybody, you know, no coworker was ever like, oh yeah, I know all about that, right. You know. Like these are more like, I'm the weirdo who's messing with people by telling them that or whatever. And then lastly, I think that there's room for there to be combinations of all of these things. Like for the Carrington event, like the reason that I think that anyone even close to mainstream would ever be talking about that now is for doom and gloom fear to tell us that everything, and that's where it was in my head for all these years too, right? Oh, you know, there's just been this like, oh yeah, you're all so happy and comfortable, but what if there's another Carrington and we're sent back to the Dark Ages? Would have been the way I would have thought it out, right? Mm-hmm. But then I doubt it for a couple of days, and then I find that newspaper yesterday where it seems to be saying that something happened. So what if there was, you know, some amazing, amazing, bright skies at that time, but that it didn't, or it wouldn't, if that happened again, affect anything electrical, or, at least not be the devastation that they're trying to plant in our heads. Mm. You know, it's notable if I'm right about Howdy saying it was like 2001 that they started writing about it in the way that they do now. Well, that's right after Y2K, when they told us everything was going to stop. Right.
Right.
And then furthermore with that too, like, well, and I'm going to bastardize stuff you just said, but what if it's from the exploding sun that was around the outside of the firmament, and that lit up our skies, and everything looked just the way that it would from Aurora Borealis, but it was actually, it had nothing to do with the sun and solar flares and geomagnetism, you know, but that the event did happen, but it was just bright skies. Most people at the time assumed it was some sort of aurora borealis, and it was logged in newspapers and journals. And then, 150 years later, powers that be that don't have our best interest in mind were like, hey, let's take this and turn it into something else to instill fear in people.
Right. Yeah, no, they're all really good points. I do think that it's used as fear. Now, I have this feeling, and this is something that's been with me as soon as I started waking up, was that there's going to be a solar flare that kills us all, kills all the physicality all at the same time. And that's like the white throne judgment, essentially, is that's how we physically experience it. As a solar flare happens and we all die immediately, physically die, but we eternally live on, those of us who change our mind state and, continue to what we talked about earlier. So the Carrington event is very interesting. And Howdy McCoskey, he's a very great thinker. And I really like the questions that he poses on his YouTube channel. And he talked about, so like I said, I watched him talk about a video on it, like right around the same time that I released the Christ Millennial Kingdom series. And I was like, well, that's, I actually commented on the video. I was like, that's my next deep dive is going to be the Carrington event, because I feel that's the rapture event. And there was something that you were saying in there that reminded me of why there was a reason why I was going to bring that up. But
was it the exploding sun?
No, I forget at the moment. And I don't know that's which okay. part it was that that you brought up. But he poses a lot of really great ideas with the Carrington event possibly being something completely different than or nothing at all, that it's only a fear tactic, which is very logical that we could come to that conclusion. So who knows? I mean, what he said in the video was that, and this makes a lot of sense to me, was that it could have been the event that shut off the Antiquitech that we talked about earlier, the electrical field, the free energy that we had in the ether, that maybe that's what that event was. And to me, that makes a lot of sense.
Oh, that's cool. I've gone there before in the last 2 years, thinking of great resets and such, and thinking, well, what if whether solar flare or maybe even like some kind of controlled event with high energy weapons or something that was the Carrington event wiped out up to 1859. We had technology that maybe just like what we have right now, all kinds of technology like this and better and or worse or whatever, mm-hmm. But it got all shut down. And that's at the time that history started being refabricated for us. World's fairs, maybe even the world's fairs prior to that were all fabricated at that time to tell people that, these right. world's fairs have been around for 100 years.
Right.
And then we're just in this cycle where they keep doing that. And we're coming up on one now, and they thought about doing it for Y2K, or, we're just warning us that this kind of thing happens at Y2K or whatever, but that, some massive event or it's all natural, and that we do just keep building ourselves up and we keep getting wiped out by the sun. I don't know.
You just popped a thought into my mind that maybe Y2K was supposed to happen, but because it didn't, then they realized that we are in the final stages, so that the next phase of the plan that hasn't been ever reached, because they kept resetting us, that September 11th, 2001 happens, and then, COVID, Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, that this was always in place from these secret societies, and that it hadn't been ever reached before, because I've seen a lot of different shows and movies that talk about time travel and stuff like that, that they're suggesting that, that it was always being reset. If you ever watch Dark from Netflix, it's a German show. It's very interesting. It's a time travel thing, but they say in there that they've reached the apex of a time period that hasn't been reached before, that it's the final one, you know, because it kept being reset before that. And I've had that feeling as well, that what you talked about being reset, you know, we'll be thrown back to the Stone Ages. We'll be reset to the 1800s, you know, of horse and buggy and all that stuff. Well, maybe that's happened a bunch of different times. So it is interesting, but I think whatever it is, that we're in the final stages of whatever's happening, that, you know, there's, I look around the world and it's pure chaos. And I just think that that's for a reason. I think, you know, order out of chaos is what they always try to do. And I don't think that they're succeeding very well. So they're just trying to make more chaos and more chaos, but we're finding more peace in ourselves with living in the chaos. Like, you know, Adam was just in Puerto Rico where it was mass chaos and it didn't bother him much at all. So, you know, they can't really bother us because we have Christ within us so strongly.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Man, I gotta say, I can't understand a lot of what we talked about today, but just like thinking about that, I don't even know if this is what you were just saying, but that there might have been multiple 1800s
mm-hmm.
that we've gone through, because we're not getting thrown all the way back to the Stone Ages. Maybe we're getting thrown back to the 1850s.
1859 over and over again. Yeah, like Bill Murray yeah. in Groundhog's Day, but in a bigger scale.
Groundhog sesquicentennial.
Well, Michelle Gibson talks about the time loop of the Great Frost in Ireland, and was it like 1741 or something, that then all the Rothschilds started being born right around that time, and that the Freemasons, quote unquote, were created in 1717, and that it's some midway point between halfway between 1492 and 1942. Like, there's all this weird stuff that goes on, you know, with them and their numerology. So I think that there were multiple attempts at least at resetting us to that type of time period.
Yeah. And just I've been thinking a lot while you guys have been talking about the signing of the Declaration of Independence, or the Bill of Rights, what you were talking about earlier, and
The Constitution.
Yeah. Everybody that signed it was Masonic.
Yep.
And just the inversion, just thinking of trying to think through everything through an inverted lens, and that everything I've ever been taught is that's like the most fantastic, you know, living document that's ever been, you know, created. And, you know, I don't really believe that anymore because of my political leanings, but just thinking of like, man, it's wild.
Well, I have a two-part series also on the biblical apocalypse, which really gets into how many famines there were and how many diseases and all sorts of different stuff like that from the 1700s and 1800s, the time period that I think Christ's millennial kingdom that I'm talking about now anyway ended. And the Declaration of Independence actually for America, I think, was the second ever around the world. And then since then, there's been hundreds, and almost every country now has a Declaration of Independence. And same with the Constitution. I think the United States of America was the third Constitution. There's one in like 1300s, one in 1500s. But after the United States signed theirs, then like every country signed one. And now almost every country has either one or the other of a Declaration of Independence and a Constitution. And my question is, what was happening that would call for those things? What were they declaring independence from? What are they constituting? You know, why all of a sudden would that happen, unless there was a civilization here that was not here any longer, or the remnants of the people that got raptured away? Or, you know, I don't know how it would all work with timing and all that, but there were some remnants of people still here, giants and other things that were going on that got taken over by humans, or they appear to be human anyway. So there's just so many questions that they can come up with.
Yeah, you're making a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Chud? You think this is a good hanging up spot? You got more questions?
No, I think this is a great hanging up spot.
Emmanuel, you said you've got a couple more chapters to dig into, correct?
Yeah.
Will you come back as soon as you have some more questions and answers to pose to us?
Yeah, absolutely. I still have more about like who the Antichrist was that is in my series that I didn't get into. You know, Donald Trump is involved with this, obviously.
Yeah, that's where I wanted to move it with the Q stuff.
Q, Napoleon. Yeah, that's my final part of the series. Part 8 is an hour and 15 minutes where like the first six are each like maybe like 15 to 30 minutes, and then part 7 is like 45 minutes, and then part 8's an hour and 15 minutes, and that's a whole episode into itself, getting into the Antichrist and the Statue of Liberty, the French Connection. There's so much there with those last two parts that's a whole episode into itself. I can definitely come back and talk about that anytime.
Yeah, so this is your second time. I think that we need six more to cover all of this, because this is going to be an 8-part series.
Yeah, hey, I'm down for it.
We can squeeze you in sooner than later. The start of June's pretty open, so maybe we should try to do that to bring you back to talk about part 8, and then we'll have you back to do the other new stuff you figure out.
All right. Yeah, that sounds great.
Okay. That'd be awesome.
All right. Any final words, gentlemen?
I'll just say that, you know, everything you hear, it's something you hear, and you should let it perk up your ears. You shouldn't get defensive or act offensively when you hear something. You should temper your emotions in one way or another. So whether you're Christian and you're offended that I'm talking about Christ's millennial kingdom happened, and you believe you're going to be raptured away, I'm sorry that I don't think that's the place and time that we are. And if you're not Christian and you think this is just a bunch of baloney, well, you know, I would just suggest that you go look at all the biblical evidence compared with the historical evidence, and just take it all in, and that you try thinking about these things in a deep way. Don't just react immediately and then that's it, whether you accept it or you don't accept it. Don't do that. Contemplate these things. Try to figure things out, like do a string of events. Okay, if this is a true, then this would be true, and then this would be true, and then this would be true. Put things together in a linear way for yourself, whether you don't believe it or you do believe it, and try to debunk yourself, because that's what I've always done, is I try to strengthen my argument by seeing where it's weak, and then I can have another leg to stand on, so that I can, you know, when you guys ask questions or anyone ask me questions about this, I can provide an answer, because I've thought about all the different ways, you know, maybe not all of them, but I've thought about a lot of different things, and it's not just a whim that I'm coming up with these things on. It's that I've studied it to the point that I'm recalling all of this off the top of my head. And like I said, it's been like 2 months since I did the series now, and I've been doing softball. I was doing 3 episodes a week for a while, and for almost a year. And then softball took over, and I've done 3 episodes in the last 3 weeks. So, you know, my studying has really been put on hold, but I can still recall the information because I've done so much searching into all this to figure out all these answers. But again, don't just take my word for it. Really go look into it yourself.
Yeah, springtime seems to be a busy time of year for a lot of people, including Chudex and I out here on our decentralized living stations.
You mean homestead?
Yeah. I mean, just like what I'd like to stress to people is, when trying to look into this or like listening to anything about what we've been talking about, just try, is just a mental exercise of losing your ego and looking at it, coming at it from a place that you don't know anything. And it's like, we're sitting here talking about the 1850s And I'm trying to think back, okay, like what's 10 years before the 1850s? In the 1840s, I know, okay, so we're starting to look at California and the gold rush. And then I'm like, I think in my head, like, why am I thinking that that's real? You know, mm-hmm. like, so just, yeah, just try to look at stuff from so many different, any different perspective. And I think a lot of that comes from just being able to drop your ego and realize that we don't really know very much.
Yeah. Know? Or as I often put it is, don't be afraid to view things through different lenses.
Yep.
You know, mm-hmm. that was our first episode together, Adam, we talked a lot about that concept. Like that was, you know, like how I did flat earth first, as I just said, huh, I don't know, this seems kind of crazy, but I'm just going to walk around for the next few days and see what I think of looking at the world as though it might be flat. And, you know, and it was the same with Tartaria. My earliest version of that was hearing that all mountains are melted buildings. And I just said, okay, you know, that's crazy. And maybe I still think that's crazy, but I just started viewing the world through a lens. I started looking at the mountains and rocks around me and I went, I don't know, you know, maybe there's a way, you know, maybe there's a way I can get into this. And, you know, this is a little deeper than that for me, but if anybody, as you were putting it, Emmanuel, if they're a non-believer or they are a believer and they don't want to hear this, just try and look at it through this lens and, mm-hmm. and just think about it, you know, just to look at it through the lens doesn't mean that you believe it or don't believe it. It's just observe it.
Yeah. And the gold rush actually, in my opinion, was that they were uncovering homes and all these different cities. And that was the gold that they found. And they just had these different people that were their diggers, you know, that they're slaves essentially, that like, oh, come find all this gold. And they were taking all the mansions and claiming everything for themselves. But it was the mud flood that covered Atlantis as, you know, it was swallowed up by the sea, as they say. And also one last thing, if you're on Facebook or Instagram, check out the Rocks Were Alive, different Facebook groups or Instagram pages. If you check out them, because you were just talking about the melted buildings, mountains are melted buildings. That's how I got introduced into Tartaria and I laughed that off. But now when I look at everything, I realize that all rock was living material that was maybe, I don't know how, but it was cast into rock formation very suddenly. Uh-huh. And a lot of those rock formations, especially ones on cliffs by water, they actually look like castles, former castles. And it's crazy, but I would definitely join them.
There's definitely something to melted buildings in general. Mm-hmm. And the Rocks Are Alive. I haven't looked at any Facebook groups, but there's a YouTube channel called Stellinium 7 that.
That's good stuff.
I'm pretty into it. I don't have time for videos these days very often. Is that often.
Like the elephant rock?
The guy? Elephant rock.
Yeah. Dean Reiner had that guy on his show.
Oh, wow. Did he? Yeah. Oh, I should dig that up and listen.
Do
to
you
that.
Know Mud Flood University on YouTube?
Yeah.
Yeah, he does a lot of stuff too. Yeah, so the Facebook groups and Instagram, they're called SIB, The Rocks Were Alive. I forget what the SIB stands for, but...
Yeah. Yeah, Casey from Golden Gate Star Fork Command just put a bunch of pictures on Instagram of him at the Grand Canyon.
Oh, nice.
It's just filled with pyramids.
Wow, I got to check that out.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Yeah.
But we're about to get... keep going into some weird stuff here, you know, so we better get off.
We can go all night.
Emmanuel, plug away.
Godcast, the Goodness Over Darkness podcast on any audio platform. Goodness Over Darkness on YouTube, and that's the best place to find my 8-part series. It's on audio as well, but you'll want to see the visuals. I present a lot of visuals with everything so that you can see what I'm talking about, because if you just hear all mountains are melted buildings and you're not seeing the evidence to back it up, it sounds so ridiculous that you won't even entertain the thought. So go do yourselves a favor and check out the video portion and try to decide for yourself. And also my Patreon, patreon.com/goodnessoverdarkness. And you can find, I have things on there that, you know, aren't available anywhere else. So you can go sign up there. And I think that's, also emmanuelkingman.com, my website. So you can go there and check out all my social media links, you know, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I just did a social media cleanse for the last week. I didn't go on at all on my phone for a week. And I only checked my messages from my computer 2 days because I was, you know, people were messaging me. That's how they got a hold of me. So that's all I did. And man, I got to tell you, I don't think I'm ever going back on Twitter.
That's the Chud X formula, man. That's how he lives his life.
You know, I heard someone refer to that as an internet fast not that long ago.
Social media fast.
And for a second, I was like, that's stupid. Like, that doesn't have anything to do with food and, you know, or something. But then I realized, oh, yeah, they're not looking at their feed. You know, and it's like, oh, maybe fasting from the internet is a more appropriate term than I just immediately.
You just blew my mind.
Yeah. Take a break from that feed. Have a fast.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, you do need it.
Cool, man. Well, I'll hit you up soon and we'll get you on pretty quick here to
cap it off.
Maybe put a button on it for now. But thanks, man. We really, really appreciate it. And guys, if you haven't listened to Emmanuel's first appearance on our show, go back and check it out. It's one of our best.
Absolutely.
So, thank you guys. Can't thank you enough, man. You're doing the Lord's work.
Well, for real. That.
Quite literally.
Yeah. So, thanks, man.
We'll talk. To do it.
We'll talk soon, man. Love you.
All right, guys. Have a great night.
All right.
Peace out, everybody.
Bye.
I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing this for me. I'm not signed on to killing all those old people or those black babies. Fuck you, motherfucking New World Order. I will get your ass to lay that. It pisses me off. You sign on to playing God, you get burned. And all you dumbasses that serve the New World Order are idiots. Playing God all day. Deciding who lives and who dies.
Penis man.
And then I find out they're all screwing little kids and devil worshiping. Of course they are. Oh, you're the big elites, Oprah Winfrey and Ted Turner and Bill Clinton and Epstein, all in that 7-story pervert building in New York. What a bunch of freaks. And the fact that those pedophiles, and I'm calling Oprah Winfrey one, hope she burns in hell. Every damn one of you's a piece of crap. And you're going to be judged. So you just continue to enjoy hurting babies and hurting old people and hurting homeless people and turn us all into a bunch of idiots. Because you will be destroyed.
Mom, I'm transgender.